We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the CHGO Cubs podcast presented by PointsBet. Use code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Hello, everyone. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. We are coming to you on Sunday, October 2nd, and Brendan, Wrigley Field, we have seen the last of her for the year.
I know. Well, they gave a proper send-off, another sweep. Corey, the Cubs just don't lose anymore.
Yes, the Cubs have won 11 of their last 12 games. They go 6-0 during this final homestand. As Brendan said, they sweep the Cincinnati Reds to finish up the Wrigley portion of the calendar. They will lose less than 90 games. Brendan, not the hallmarks that we hope to be looking for, right? I'd rather be discussing whether they won 90 or 100 games, things like that. They're changing a lot of rules in Major League Baseball. How do we feel about, I feel like if this team had another like 60 games,
yeah,
if we could push this season to 220-something games.
I've been saying that.
I think this team is sneaking in.
I think so too. Well, you know, in the minors, they have like a playoff seed for like the first and second half, Corey.
Right.
If you just consider the second half,
yes,
we're the best team in baseball.
The second half Cubs.
Manfred needs to consider this.
They unify
the sport.
They do need to consider this. And I mean, you know, just picture it. It's game 7 of the World Series. It's the Cubs and Anthony Rizzo's Yankees and Adrian Sampson on the mound for the Cubs. And he pitches another quality start, which is all he's done for the last 3 months. Yeah.
There you go. You know, 7-8 innings shutout, and then bring in Wisniewski for the you know, World Series clinching save.
There you go. So
done.
I might a little late for the 2022 Cubs, but I'm just saying it does feel like a little more runway, right? And this team, they played very well, Brendan. And I know that we've talked about that a lot. Nico had that kind of lengthy quote about the importance of finishing on a strong note and showing what this group is capable of. I think they've done that. This is a really nice end to an otherwise not so fun, you know, below, I think, the expectations we all have for this organization season. They've played really well here. You've had a lot of guys step up and contribute to winning. The fact that, you know, they're 73-86 after the sweep on Sunday, like, that is, at certain points of this season, way better than I thought they would be able to achieve.
Well, you think after they trade, you know, half their bullpen away at the deadline, that their record would get worse, that their pitching would get worse. It's been the opposite. Their overall pitching ERA is around 3.5 in the second half. So this is a huge testament to the hard work by, you know, Hadavi Yan Gomes behind the dish, the entire catching crew teaming up and strategizing, bringing guys up. So the Cubs deserve a lot of credit. And my hope is, everyone's hope is, that this type of game plan, this type of success carries over right away and you go on and win the division without any competition next year.
Yeah, I do want to, I think I maybe said this on the last episode, but I do kind of want to reiterate something when we're talking about how well they've played and a lot of the stuff that we're highlighting and, you know, the starting rotation, ERA, things like that. Like, it is weird, and I don't know if you've seen this too, Brendan, like on social media. I mean, social media is a toxic mess for the most part anyway, but like, there's just a lot of very cynical people who are like, oh, who cares that they're winning games? You know, who cares that the rotation is doing this? None of this matters and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just is a very, like, weird and I think cynical way of viewing all of this, right? Like, nobody's suggesting that they just run this roster back and they would win the division. Like, when we're talking about lengthening the season to 200, like, that's obviously a joke, right? Like, this roster had a full season. Well, maybe. This roster had a full season, and there were times where the holes and the cracks really showed, right? They lost double digits in a row multiple times. Yeah. So it's not to say that, but it's just to point out that over a significant sample of games in this second half, you have had a lot of guys that can, up to Jed Hoyer, can be a part of your roster next year in a supplementary way, I think for the most part, hopefully, right? They've contributed to winning at the major league level. And I'm just not sure what there is to be cynical about something like that, right? Nobody's saying that this group right now is capable of winning the World Series, but they're beating MLB teams. This earlier this week, they beat a Philadelphia Phillies team that's holding on for dear life to a playoff spot and desperately needed to win games, and the Cubs handled them, right? And you can look at this weekend and say, oh, it's the Reds, whatever. Well, guess what? In 2023, they're going to have to play the Reds. And having pitchers who can throw quality starts against major league talent, that matters. Having guys that are 23 years old in some cases, like Christopher Morel or some of the other young guys on this team, be able to come up and have big moments that lead to winning Major League Baseball games, you don't have to extrapolate it into some greater thing. But I think it, like, just in a vacuum, like, that's good, right?
If you look at the way they're doing it, too, it's not as if these guys are rentals and going away. Stroman's second half numbers, excluding that start, were over one WAR. His FIP and ERA were 2.92 and under 3.7, Corey, in the second half. Justin Steele, his Fangraphs WAR was 1. Drew Smyly, who could be back next year, 1 WAR as well. Adrian Sampson has 1 WAR. Hayden Wisniewski, in just 5 outings, has half a win. Corey Alzolay, 11 innings, almost half a win. So these guys, just those last two names alone, have only been up for less than a month.
Right.
So you're seeing the success and the wins be due to that pitching. You want those guys to succeed. And there is a validative component to this. Psychologically, I think that you get rewarded with wins when you perform well. It's good to win games.
Yes.
So it's not meaningless.
Right.
They're doing this in a way that will translate to next year in terms of the actual personnel. This, and you're hearing like guys like Nico talk about it and Jed Hoyer talk about it. So I understand the sentiment of wanting to improve, but there could have been a lot of complaints about Stroman not finishing the second half well, because
right.
He was getting kind of criticized during the first half, and he performed extremely well in the second half, Corey.
Well, and you look across the league, right? Like, you want to look at, like, go look at some of the teams that are at the absolute bottom. They can't string together stuff like this because the talent isn't there, right? Like, some of the worst teams in the league cannot kind of reverse course, you know, in the second half the way that the Cubs did to the degree that they did, because they stink and their players stink. And that's not what happened for the Cubs. And I think that matters. So I think you said it best. It's like, this isn't meaningless. You don't need to extrapolate it into something like crazy, because they have a lot of work to do in this offseason. I think a lot of us, you and, you know, me and you included, Brendan, expect them to do it.
They have to do it.
And I do think they're going to. But I don't know. It just, there was a weird, you know, there's always like a weird sub-segment of people that like to kind of, you know, wet blanket certain things. And it's like, yeah, this team's not going to win the World Series without a lot of work, but this is all good stuff. The net here is good. And like, you look at the vibes like around this team this weekend, there is a sort of energy about them that does have that feel of like, you know, turning the page to something exciting, right? Like that was the feeling yeah. being at the games this weekend and the younger guys performing, them winning games. It has that feel of like, okay, we're ready for that next step. We look to you, Tom and Jed, but like we're ready for it. The team feels ready for it. The organization feels ready for it. We have some, there was a lot going on this weekend. So we'll get to the, you know, box scores and series recaps. But I do want to continue kind of on some of the stuff that was going on this weekend. And, you know, kind of to that point, Brendan, about they have work to do and I expect them to do it. An interesting note that we saw, and I'm getting this from Megan Montemuro of the Chicago Tribune. 2,600,000-ish fans at Wrigley Field this season. Now, in a vacuum, maybe not a number that registers to you, but what is important is that it is the lowest home total for the Chicago Cubs since 1997, Brendan. I know people are cynical about the Ricketts and spending and all of that. There is plenty of audio from myself and Dr. Brendan Miller here. Our thoughts on that are very clear, right? And when the Cubs should be spending, which is always, right? Here's what I'm going to tell you. Believe me or don't, this matters to them. It absolutely matters to them. Any business person, any business owner would look at this. They know that if the team is good, that number is going to be over 3 million, right? It can be much higher. There is money being left on the table. I think, right, that they would like to have that money that is left on the table.
You would think so.
Yes. So I do think that matters. I know some people wanted the ballpark like empty, right, until they, but that was never going to happen. There was a significant hit though, right? I mean, you look for 1997, there were some way worse teams than this since 1997. Mm-hmm. Like there was somewhat of a statement made by the fans. And once we, you know, get to like November-ish, we'll find out if that statement was received. But I do think that matters.
If we look at the TV ratings as well, this was back during the summer, but Marquee's numbers were down by about 20%, I believe in July from the same period in 2021. That 20% is a massive hit, especially when the comparison is 2021, when the team wasn't aspiring for a World Series championship. So the overall numbers could be, you know, a net gain of 30 to 40% more viewers next season if they put out a serious contender. So you have the TV money aspect of that that translates to advertisement revenue. Then you have the gate revenue as well, the merchandise of signing new guys. And it's right there. They only have around $125 million committed next season, which is about $110 million below the luxury tax threshold. They have so much flexibility and they have such a strong foundation in their depth that they can add upon. It makes so much sense. It's almost too stupid to not add to this team, Corey.
Yeah, that would be my sentiment as well. I also think this weekend, kind of continuing along these lines, I think this weekend was a good example. If you are a free agent, you know, Nico spoke to playing well and how that appeals to players wanting to join a new team, move their family to a new city and stuff like that. You know, you want to join, if you have the option, a group that's playing well and going to be fun to be a part of. But what a showing from our fellow faithful at Wrigley Field this weekend on multiple occasions. Firstly, Jason Hayward sharing a farewell address that they played at Wrigley, and then he got to take a curtain call out of the dugout, received a lengthy standing ovation. They played it again on Sunday. He didn't come out again, but a large applause as soon as the video started. Then you look at Wilson Contreras, who received multiple well-deserved standing ovations. But also, like, you know, you just see it, right? When he's lifted for the pinch runner after getting on base in his final plate appearance at Wrigley Field for now as a Cub, we'll see how that all plays out. Immediately, the whole crowd standing up, right? They know what's going on. They're appreciative of everything that he's put in. This is not stuff that needs to be explained to people, right? Then the team coming out, you know, singing Go Cubs Go with the fans, everybody sticking around after the game. And, you know, as I said, this is for a team that's 13 games under 500, right? They've been out of the playoff race for weeks now. Like, officially, they've been out of the playoff race for longer than that. But it's everybody's last game of the year, but my last game of the year on Sunday afternoon. And I think this whole weekend felt like a masterclass in why we all think Cubs fans are so great and why you hear so many quotes from the players. And, you know, they had a lot of the young guys. They had some prospects there. I know Matt Mervis was there. PCA was there this weekend. Brendan Davis was there this weekend. But you also heard that there was a good quote I'm reading from Jordan Bastian of MLB.com from Hayden Wisniewski talking about how surreal the response was from Cubs fans for Hayward and Contreras in particular this weekend. And he said, quote, "It's something that you dream of. That's actually something I dream of. It's not just making your big league debut. All the days in between that you don't think about, they're part of it. They're hard. They're not easy. Wilson's had bad days. Jay Hayes had bad days, but there's also good days. Me and Javier Assad were joking about it. One day we hope to have that." And just noting that those, you know, seeing the response for those two players this weekend showed him how much the fans care, not just about winning, but also all of the stuff that goes into winning and that each of these players contributed. Just like I said, the vibes, you know, it feels like we're building towards something, Brendan, and I think that was on full display this weekend.
Well, you heard, too, Nico a few weeks ago talk about this, and it reminded me of what he said during that time period 3 weeks ago. And Nico said, quote, "I don't think winning is something that you just happen upon. It's something that you've done before in big situations, dealing with other people and building relationships with other people and then knowing that it's possible," end quote. This is one of the steps. This is one of the processes that you take upon as a team to grow. And I do value that. I think you look at someone like Hayden Wisniewski, right? And you look at someone like Adbert Alzolay and even Marcus Stroman and what they've gone through to change different pitch types. You look at Keegan Thompson and the three breakers that he developed. And you see, for example, Kyle Hendricks talking with Keegan Thompson about maybe developing a breaker of his own. These are the tangible effects of having a history of winning, a history of success, because it could trickle on over to someone else's repertoire. You saw that happen with Yu Darvish stealing Craig Kimbrell's curveball, right? Because Kimbrell was having success. So the more people that have success, even during the season that's not necessarily meaningful in a playoff window this season, that's still meaningful for next season and for these guys to continue their adaptation process.
Yeah. Absolutely. On Wilson in particular, I mean, you know, it's certainly a lot of emotional, you know, tugging at the heartstrings for us for these last couple of years. I would prefer to be done with that, if I'm being honest with you, Brendan. Trade deadline last year, trade deadline this year. You know, we got the kind of false start with Wilson. Now we're doing it again. Like, I don't really have the heart for this over and over again.
This is the last time it's ever going to happen, Corey, for at least the next 5 years.
Well, unless he accepts the qualifying offer and we do it again next year.
Nah, I can't do it again. I'm like, I'm overwhelmed with this. It's too much for me. Yeah.
I don't want to get too much into Wilson in terms of like the coming decision, because we'll talk about that a lot, and Luke and Cody and Ryan will also talk about it. Once we get there, right, they're going to have to officially offer the qualifying offer, you know, which would obviously also suggest they're not going to engage in a longer contract discussion. And then he has to make a decision on that. He did say, you know, in his press conference on Sunday that he is kind of at peace with this. He feels like, you know, he has been in this organization for a very long time, and it means the world to him, but he also feels like he has earned his spot in free agency, and hell yeah, dude, he has. And we've, even at the trade deadline, like you and I and everybody kind of debated the merit of a long-term extension for him, things like that. And we'll get into that once we get, you know, to the actual decision. But I think for this weekend, I'm glad that he got the moments that he did, you know, the shows of respect from the fans that he did, so many people, David Ross, et cetera, able to speak highly of him again. And in less of a, it's still a weird environment, right? But I feel like at the trade deadline, it was like, well, this could happen in any second now. And it just, it has that weird kind of like, well, I don't know what to say, because he might still be here, but he also might get traded in the next 30 seconds, so I don't really know. This felt more like a proper send-off, if that is indeed what it is. It was cool that David Ross lifted him in the middle of an inning so that he could walk off the field, appreciate that. And, you know, look, whether you think they should keep him long-term or not, Brendan, I don't know how you watch him, you know, after they sang Go Cubs Go, everybody on the field, Wilson stayed out there. He was the last one out there to kind of bid farewell to the fans. Whatever you think they should do long-term, I don't know how you watch that. Like, my house is just me, but there was not a dry eye in the house, at least from my perspective.
I mean, he's one of those personalities that you'll look back on, as I do with Carlos Zambrano. Does that, the 110% effort, as he even described it himself, those guys are rare. You don't typically see on a daily basis, 162-game basis, someone go all out like Wilson. So whether he's going to remain on the Cubs or not, those memories persist. And the goodbyes that might seem exhaustive over the last 2 months, they're well-deserved, and I think he'll be looked fondly upon. And ultimately, if he is extended with a qualifying offer or a longer-term contract extension, you know, these memories that he's provided over the last 6 years, it doesn't necessarily go away. So, you know, he deserves it. I'm kind of exhausted doing this, but that's kind of where I am with this. But let's take a quick break here for our sponsor, PointsBet. This football season, PointsBet is bringing you a better way to bet live on games, which means before this ad is over, you can place a live same-game parlay, bet on the next drive to be a touchdown, and cash out on your live second-half over bet. With PointsBet, you have access to more live football markets than ever before. Build a perfect live same-game parlay by combining your favorite bets anytime during the game, including spreads, totals, player props, and more. Choose the outcome of the next drive and next points with PointsBet Lightning Bets. So whether you're on the move or on the couch, do it live on PointsBet. Download the PointsBet app today and sign up with code CHGO to get your first two bets risk-free up to $2,000. If you or somebody knows a gambling problem and wants to help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. Our next partner has a product I've been using every day for several months. I started taking AG1 because I wanted to kickstart my day with complete nutrition, and I'm not a big breakfast guy. Now I've been on this for, what is this, 3-4 months, and this does not taste super healthy. It kind of has a mild tropical taste. I look forward to this each morning. So what actually is this stuff? In just one scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. The special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all of these things. I get a noticeable boost of energy, so I take it first thing in the morning on an empty stomach. This is lifestyle friendly, whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, gluten-free, or dairy-free. You're all good to go with AG1. You're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance for less than $3 a day. It's recommended by professional athletes and has more than 7,000 five-star reviews. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CHGOCubs. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/CHGOCubs to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
You know, Brendan, as we're having this conversation, it is dawning on me that I don't get to go to Wrigley Field for, like 6 months.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So are you just going to like be quiet the entire podcast the rest of the way? Do I have to like just go solo for the next 40 minutes?
I'm feeling
here?
A little melancholy. I can tell. Yeah, a little melancholy.
The tone in your voice just like completely lowered.
Just thinking about it, you know, and it's just, and I wonder now that I live so close, I wonder if that makes it worse because I have to walk by there like to go to the train or get coffee or anything. Gonna have very like let me in kind of vibes, you know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I mean at least you get to see it, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah,
live in the shadows, you can see the beautiful historic Wrigley Field.
Do they put the trophy in like a window case?
Usually it's in the lobby of the office on Waveland.
So you can see it when you walk by, right?
What trophy are you talking about?
I'm talking about the World Series trophy, Corey.
I was a little late on that because I answered the question, but
a little bit.
So I know I just told you where you can see it, but what actually are you talking about, Brendan? all right, so let's. It's an emotional weekend for a lot of reasons, and there will be a lot more Wilson Contreras discussion, I'm sure, but I think for now we're just gonna let marinate the weekend that was and the ovations and the love that was flowing from him and the fans and other members of the organization, and we'll cross the analytical bridge of the move to make perhaps at another time. But let's look at these games real quick, do a quick run through of these box scores, and then I want to talk about some of these pitchers in particular. On Friday, a 6-1 Cubs win behind Brendan. Stop me if I've said it before, but another quality start from Adrian Sampson. It is
Ace
all
Adrian Sampson.
He does. It's all he does. Seven innings, three hits, one run, two walks, six strikeouts, a 3.10 ERA, 97 pitches for Adrian Sampson. They might as well make the Cy Young plaque for next year already. Just get it out of the way. The Cubs getting their six runs in this game. Nico Hoerner double, Christopher Morel double. Nico Hoerner force out, brings in two runs in addition to a throwing error by the Reds. And then Yan Gomes with a ground rule double gets us to six. Eric Yeoman, a scoreless inning behind Sampson, and Rowan Wick, a scoreless inning behind Sampson. So all good on the pitching front on Friday. Saturday, it was a 2-1 Cubs win on three innings from Drew Smyly. Four hits, one run, no walks, two strikeouts. Drew reiterated this weekend he would love to come back to the Chicago Cubs because, as we pointed out before, Brendan, players like playing here, and they will continue to want to play here. Adbert Alzolay follows with three scoreless innings, no hits, no runs, no walks, and four strikeouts, Brendan. So definitely interested in your thoughts on that. We also get two scoreless from Wade Miley, two and a third scoreless from Manny Rodriguez, and one out, a third of an inning. His eighth save of the year, a strikeout for Brandon Hughes. Really, I think we talked about it on the last episode, Brendan, but just a quick aside, I'm really loving this whole Manny Rodriguez to Brandon Hughes thing that they've been trying out here.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. Well, yeah, the sinker up and in that Manny's throwing, the hard stuff, the slider, it's good stuff.
Yeah, you go with some of the hard stuff from Manny, and then you bring in the kind of more difficult look, the more unique delivery and all arm slot, et cetera, from Brandon Hughes. It seems I couldn't hit a baseball that you threw, Brendan, but it seems tough, to hit those guys. So
I mean, it looks tough. I mean, I might be able to do it, I'm just saying.
Yeah, what's funny is I'm sure you do believe that. That's the thing.
I might be able to foul off some of those
pitches.
He's not
even kidding, folks.
Foul them off, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. the Cubs getting their two runs on Saturday, shockingly enough, not off of the bat of Dr. Brendan Miller here, but a triple from Nelson Velasquez, who had a very nice weekend, and the 14th home run of the season for Seiya Suzuki. Want to talk about both of those guys. They both had nice weekends. And on Sunday, the finale, the person that I want to talk about first when we jump out of this, Marcus Stroman finishes up his season, 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. An inning of 1-run ball from Mark Leiter Jr., another scoreless outing with 3 strikeouts for Rowan Wick. What a roller coaster he's been on. He looks great for several outings in a row, then terrible, then great. Yeah. Who knows? Eric Yeoman, another scoreless, so a nice weekend there from him. The Cubs getting their 8 runs. They scored 5 of them in the first inning. They showed up and they were ready to sweep in the Wrigley Field finale, Brendan. Ian Happ walked with the bases loaded to get things started. Nico Horner grounding into a force out brings in number 2. Franmil Reyes single brings in number 3. And a Nelson Velasquez double brings in number 4 and 5. Bottom of the 4th, Nico Horner with a sac fly. And then in the bottom of the 7th, it was a triple from Nelson Velasquez to bring in the final 2. Again, 8-1 the final. The Cubs sweep the Cincinnati Reds. But Brendan, I want to talk about Marcus Stroman. This will be his last outing of the year, of course, with only 3 games left to go. In his final 16 outings of the season, dating back to the beginning of July, a 2.56 ERA for Marcus Stroman. We've talked about him a lot, but I feel like now that the book is closed, right, this was a really good season for Marcus Stroman, and you can't always throw away the bad ones, or, you know, you have to look at the full context. But the storyline for me is those last 16 outings. A 2.56 ERA. He looked phenomenal. He's a wizard on defense off the mound. But for the majority of this year, he looked exactly like the person you paid him to be.
Yeah. Well, that's what you're paying him to be, as you said. I mean, for almost $24 million per year, you're expecting a pitcher that's about 2.5 wins above replacement. And scaling Stroman's value this year basically supersede, like, he went above those expectations. Even with only 140 innings, he was still worth almost 2 WAR, Corey. So he was right there. The COVID set him back a little bit. The unorthodox ramp up here, not to make excuses, but it stole innings away. And to finish strong in your last 16 starts, despite those misfortunate starting points of the season, it is huge. And he's doing this in a way that resembles what he's been doing for the past couple of years. Heavy slider usage, heavy sinker usage, showcasing the splitter exceptionally well, throwing cutters, showing his dynamic pitch repertoire, showing his dynamic defense out there. And he's a guy that is going to be in your rotation, your anchor in your rotation, that can hand the ball off from like an ace top shelf pitcher down to your number 3 pitcher with no problem whatsoever. So this is huge. I think maybe it's taken for granted, Corey, because if Stroman was not this guy, let's say like Stroman had, you know, a more serious shoulder injury, the likes of Kyle Hendricks' experience, this would be a different conversation. Like, this rotation and the depth and the projectability would be so much different if Stroman did not succeed in the second half the way he did. So I think it needs to be a point of emphasis. And just keep reminding myself just how important this actually was.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that goes to the conversation we kind of had at the beginning about, like, them winning and guys playing well being important, right? Like, and you mentioned that at the time, like, you know, what if he had been bad, right? Like,
I mean,
yeah,
it changes,
this matters.
The outlook of the offseason.
Yeah, of course it does, right? Like, big now time. You're looking at this going, okay, like, you know, how they exactly decide to address that, we'll see. But, like, this Marcus Stroman, the Marcus Stroman that we've seen for the last 3+ months here, like, he's, you know, in this context, I would give him the ball in Game 1 in a playoff series. But if you can build a rotation where you're giving him the ball in Game 2, like, giddy up, right? Like, he's been great.
Right. Well, he's doing this, too, with that sinker usage. I give the Cubs credit for trying to change things with him to bring out more value early on. But back in April, May, and June, he was throwing his sinker around 25 to 30% of the time, so almost once every 3 to 4 pitches. And then recently, he's been throwing his sinker once every other pitch, which is a substantial uptick, and it's being thrown instead of his four-seam, which clearly the Cubs wanted to try to maximize. So now that four-seam is being used the least amount of time compared to his sinker, followed by his slider, then his cutter, than his splitter. He still throws a four seam maybe like, you know, 3 to 5 times a game, but it's definitely not one of his main pitch types. So this success is stable. The health looks right there. The velocity's clearly there. He's feeling himself. He looks like the typical guy that you've seen in years past. And this value, Corey, that he provides is worth $25 to $30 million. So if you want to play that super dark game, if he did not turn around this season, if he didn't come back from that shoulder injury successfully, you have to fill his spot with $25 to $30 million to replace that value. That is an enormous liability for your capabilities to go out and try to improve the top shelf of your rotation. So this is really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited to see what he can do. And I've mentioned this before, but he's one of those guys who I really, really want to see when this team is competitive, right?
And you talk about energy, man.
Right.
Imagine that.
Yeah, we just have not. It feels, I mean, any season where, you know, you're pitching and you're not making the playoffs, it's sort of wasted in a sense. But he in particular feels wasted on a team that is not competitive, right? Like, I want him out there when the games mean the most. I want him, you know, talking his smack on Twitter when the games mean the most. Like, you just feel, I feel like whatever Marcus's version of Jake Arrieta telling that guy that, you know, it doesn't matter,
it
right?
doesn't matter.
I want that from Marcus Stroman, because we're going to get it if the Cubs are good, right? And I think it's going to be chef's kiss, delicious.
I mean, speaking of not wasting, you know, value, there's one guy in Los Angeles and Anaheim, you know, Shohei Ohtani, he's kind of being wasted. Oh, you know, help him out too. Bring him on over.
You would be
talk
interested
about
in that?
I think I would. I got to think about it a little bit deeper, Corey, but I think I would.
Okay. No, I mean, yeah, that's, you know, that's fair. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a hot take, but
I know. I like Shohei Ohtani. I know, kind of hot take-ish.
Right. So, you know, look, I don't have anything else to say about Adrian Sampson, right? Like, we've talked about that. Incredible run here, though. I want to get your thoughts more specifically on Edward Alzolay and the outing that he had the other day, especially no walks and the 4 strikeouts.
Yeah,
that felt
great.
Like the best we've seen of him so far. Yeah. So I want to hear your thoughts on that. But yeah, just parting thoughts on Adrian Sampson. I mean, just what an incredible run. I mean, it sort of started as a joke after like the first 3 or 4, where it's like, oh, another quality start from Adrian Sampson. And it's like, now, so like, as I'm watching these games, like, you watch these games and it's like, oh, look, he's doing it again, right? Like, oh, they have one run and it's the 6th or 7th inning. Like, he's literally just going to keep doing this.
Yeah, that's the benefit about pitching towards the edges. We've seen it with Alec Mills in the past. We're seeing it with Sampson. We've seen it with Assad during several starts this season. And that's to the Cubs coaches and the strategies credit, Corey. And you give this team a better defense next year, and you can imagine that those types of outings could continue. It's never comfortable to rely on heavy contact pitchers like those guys, but if those are your depth pieces, if Sampson and Assad and those heavy contact guys are your 6th, 7th, 8th guys, you could have a lot worse options than them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so hit me with Edward Alzolay.
Throwing 2 different sliders, we know that. He continues to throw that slider as his dominant pitch. So on Saturday, 33 pitches, 18 of which were sliders. The actual number of like slider variation 1 versus slider variation 2 kind of shifted towards slider variation two, which I guess, I mean, the number doesn't make sense, but he's throwing more of his slider that you typically see against right-handed batters, and that slider will be thrown around 86 to 88 miles per hour. It won't have as much vertical break. We'll have a little bit more cutting action to it. It's also, again, thrown 86 to 88, whereas his other slider against lefties is thrown around 81 to 84, has more vertical break. But given that he faced mostly righties against the Reds, you saw that pitch come out a little bit more often. In those 18 pitches, he induced 9 swings. 6 of those swings were whiffs. That's really, really encouraging to see. And then he threw 10 four seams. So that was different. So he was typically throwing a lot of slider sinkers in the past, and he was throwing a lot of sliders in the early going with four seams, but the four seam you thought might go towards lefties more often. But in this case, you saw 10 four seams and 33 pitches, and he saw a sinker only thrown 5 times. So that signals maybe a shift in thinking, perhaps, in the four-seam usage. But overall, you're seeing what Alzolay could look like in this role, and this role of 2, 3, 4 innings, heavy, heavy slider usage. Use your best pitch, get those whiffs out, and maximize your value in a 1-2 lineup facing window. And I think you're hearing Tommy Hotovy really talk highly of it. You're hearing Alzolay saying he'll do whatever is necessary. And my imagination is that by next season, he's going to be that Keegan Thompson type role that we saw early on in April and May. We're seeing him come in, you know, 3rd, 4th, 5th inning, and just carry that initial starting outing by whomever's pitching that day all the way towards those high leverage late innings that you saw Keegan do.
Yeah, I'm into it, and I'm glad that, you know, obviously he was able to work back from the injury just for that alone. But it may not end up, I mean, you tell me, but it's not a super significant sample that we're going to see from him, but it doesn't feel insignificant.
No,
either.
No. It is, so the sample size stuff, like to say, okay, Adbert's gonna, you know, strike out 14 guys a game, that's not stable, right? And to say his walk rate under 1 is gonna continue, that's not stable either. But what is stable is the stuff that he shows. So his ability to throw quality sliders and how that stuff grades stabilizes within, like, you know, 50 to 100 pitches, Corey. So that does suggest that whatever he's been working on, it's not a fluke. That stuff is moving the way it is, not because of some, like, flukiness. So that is encouraging. You can actually infer that those pitches will continue to have success next year because they're moving differently. So that's not a small sample.
Yeah, I just mean I'm glad that he was able to get back, and we were able to get, you know, not just 1 or 2 outings, right? Like, he's able to get out there, work on some stuff, show us some stuff. Well, like, when we do a, like, you know, when the season is really over and we look back at stuff in detail, you know, maybe we'll figure out all the ins and outs of this. But I feel like they got a good look at a lot of people, right? Especially if we're just talking the pitching staff. Like, there are a lot of guys who Jed and Carter and everybody involved in putting this roster together next year can look at and at least have a decision on their hands of, like, okay, does this guy fit? Does he not fit? Here's where I do feel it was productive this season in that regard, right?
Sure.
You have a ton of guys that are still with your organization, under contract, coming back, and you don't have to utilize all of them, right? Like, you don't have to make it a priority that, I don't know, Eric Yeoman has a huge role, right? Like, that's not the point. But you saw a lot from a lot of different guys, a lot of it good. And it's always good to be able to make decisions from a place where you feel like you have some good depth there to build upon.
You saw a lot of those guys in big samples. You have confidence that Steele is going to be in your rotation next year. You have confidence that Keegan is going to be a significant innings getter in the form of a fifth starter or sharing that similar role that Alzolay is currently in right now. And Alzolay, you imagine, if he's healthy, he's going to continue to get these chances as well. And you look at Samson and Assad and those back end of the rotation guys, and you've seen like even Jeremiah Estrada come out and Yolman. These are significant outings, and going into the season, we wanted to make the most out of these opportunities. I think if you're talking about like, you know, maximizing value and the likelihood of this happening, this is kind of the top end of those projections, Corey, to get so much information in a way that's actually useful, coinciding with success. You have to be ecstatic about this. Unfortunately, the early going in April, May, you lost those one-run games. You had some injuries with Kyle and Stroman. You were kind of tinkering with your bullpen and your starting rotation guys. It didn't work out, and they were losing tons and tons of games. But you can kind of see in the second half, once these guys get opportunities and they're stable and you learn more about them, you learn what needs to be changed, this is how you win baseball games. And so for Alzolay specifically, before I talk about this for like three more hours, but with Alzolay, because of last year and those troubles that he went through against left-handed batters, that spurred the changes we're seeing right now. So that is useful. Even last season was useful for Alzolay, even though the numbers weren't there. And in the same vein, I'm sure a lot of the pitchers we're seeing right now will be useful to use as information to adapt and get better for next season. This is a really big deal, Corey.
Yeah, absolutely. So before you do our last sponsor break here, I am curious, how long of an episode, like if you put out your own episode that was just like Dr. Brendan Miller in the Pitch Lab, how long do you think you could talk in one sitting? And subsequently, how long do you think people would listen for? Like, what is the threshold at which people would listen?
Well, I know I lose you after like 10 minutes. So
I'm not even listening to you right now.
That's what I'm saying. So I have no idea. Like, I could probably talk. I mean, we've done solo episodes over the past 5 years. I can do it for at least an hour. I could probably do it for 3 hours, you know? Like, if I actually ran my own like models, I could do it for 3 hours, no doubt about that. If I ran my own like models and everything, and like actually sat down for a few hours, I could for sure do like a good episode.
Like a lecture, or like a book on tape, yeah. But you're doing it live.
It is. It is.
Okay, yeah. So as we get into our number two here.
it would be like a lecture. I can like Zoom, you know, record my screen and everything. Oh, that'd be kind of cool.
Look, I'm not, I'm floating the idea. That's all.
I know.
I'm just curious. About it. Yeah.
Okay. Break here for our sponsor, Pins and Aces. Pins and Aces is the official golf apparel partner of CHGO. We love our Pins and Aces gear and get tons of compliments on and off the course. They are a family-owned golf and apparel business. They make amazing polos, hats, golf bags, and even our favorite beer sleeve, an innovative product that allows you to store 7 beers right inside your golf bag and keep drinks cold the entire 18 rounds. Check out pinsandaces.com and use code CHGO to receive 15% off your first order and get free shipping. That's pinsandaces.com.
All right, Brendan, I want to talk a little bit of offense here. Some guys, obviously, we've been keeping an eye on. I want to talk about Seiya Suzuki. He is, of course, recently a father, so he's got that dad energy flowing through him now. 1-for-4 on Friday, 1-for-3 on Saturday, and then on Sunday in the finale, 2-for-4 with a walk. And, of course, he had the game-winning home run on Saturday. Seiya Suzuki said this over the weekend. Numbers-wise, I feel like I'm not satisfied. I feel like I can do a little better. But I think the most important thing is I'm getting used to life here. And that's going to be a huge benefit for me next year and baseball-wise, too. I'm excited for what I can do next. Brendan, you know why I'm excited for what he can do next? Because as a rookie in Major League Baseball, when he's saying he's not satisfied, he's got a 342 weighted on base average and a 121 WRC plus. So if there is another gear for Seiya Suzuki, sign me up for it.
You see the potential that the gear is not a stretch of the imagination. The home run he hit, Corey, on Saturday was a 95 mile per hour fastball, a running fastball in on his hands that he turned on. That is the epitome of a high-end bat to ball hitter. someone with a ton of power as well. Just a matter of him getting that consistent timing down. We've seen him tinker with the different foot strides, the leg kicks. We saw in that particular instance, he had more of a faster leg stride. But you see just the ability when he does barrel up and when he feels comfortable with his timing, that's what translates. Corey, he has above league average contact, but his strikeout rate is below league average. So that means over time, you imagine once he gets more comfortable and he's not satisfied, as he said, once these numbers start to actually normalize a little bit, you know, 342 wOBA, you can see add in an extra five extra base hits, you know, maybe a couple extra home runs, couple extra base hits. You're looking around a WRC plus of 130 plus, Corey. This season for Seiya, you can maybe make the argument that of all the offensive guys, like even including Nico, Corey, from just an offensive standpoint, that Seiya's season was the most significant of the bunch, because you have money committed to him right now. And in the same way you talk about Stroman and him having success being so important for the payroll and projecting guys, similar conversation with Seiya. You're paying him and you're seeing instantly him be well above league average with the recency of him being successful due to adjustments that could carry over into next year. Like Stroman, this is really, really important for this team next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think we end up seeing a little more power. He certainly had more power in Japan. So I think, you know, transitioning over, I think you see a bump there in the future. I also think, you know, you look at right now, he's at about a little over two wins above replacement, right? I think his defense will be a lot better and more consistent next year. We talked about this maybe an episode or two ago, but, you know, it's a different league. You've got different balls, very different stadiums, right? And Wrigley Field in particular is not an easy place to play the outfield. You've got brick walls covered in ivy, right? And then in, you know, right field, you've got the alley down the line. You've got the stands kind of jutting on that diagonal right along the foul line. Like, it's not an easy place to play, right? You've got extreme winds all the time. I think he's looked more comfortable with that, right? He had a really great play, I think, in that Phillies series. He's looked more comfortable, and I think over the course of the full year next year, he'll be more comfortable the entire time. He'll be more settled here in general, just in life, and also have a, you know, a full year of big league experience and roaming around in Wrigley Field under his belt. So, I he's excited for what he can do next. So am I, because like this, you've got three games left, but to me, this is like a massive success for a rookie season.
Yeah, with the defense right now, he's rating in the 12th percentile for outfield jump and outs above average. The transition from playing mostly in a dome without wind conditions, without sunlight, and then going similarly to night games in different environments, and I imagine it's difficult to adjust to. Like, you can imagine if you're not getting the consistent repetition over and over and over again in these outdoor environments, naturally you're not going to pick the ball up like as well as you typically would in an indoor environment. That would be my guess. We never really heard about this for other outfielders coming from mostly like a dome type playing setting. So I am curious what other folks would say about this, but you see in some instances that Seiya is just not getting a good read off the bat. But when he does get a good read, he gets there. The athleticism is obviously there. Like, his sprint speed is in the 80th percentile, and his arm is also pretty good. So for me, it's just a matter of repetition, and perhaps having this offseason with no lockout, you can actually train with like Cubs coaches and actually improve in a way that's useful, especially maybe in the Wrigley environment, and replicating that this offseason. So I do expect him to increase his defensive value as well.
I suppose we can finish the Seiya portion of the discussion. Then I just want to, you know, note one thing on Nelson Velasquez, and then we can preview this upcoming and final series.
The last
Brendan.
One. Look at that.
But, you know, boy, like, I mean, I think this one should get you a little worked up. You, Brendan, specifically, and anyone listening. Ooh. Saya said, quote, "Personal statistics are important, but for me, I think the most important thing is winning. When you win, the atmosphere in the locker room is amazing. That's what I want to feel next year. I want to win with this team and win a championship. Let's ride." Let's Brendan, it's October 2nd. I'm ready to go. I'm going to have to dial that back because they, you know, only have 3 games left. But Saya wants to win a championship. Let's go, boys. We got a championship to win.
You're kind of swinging on the highs and lows this podcast. You know, 30 minutes ago, you're crying over Wrigley being the last time you have to go to this year. So, you know, we got the ebbs and flows with you this podcast.
I think it's emblematic of me as a person. I'm all over the place.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Okay, so let's preview
thing. I did just want to note, you know, again.
Oh, Nelson, yeah.
Yeah, we talked last episode, you know, he didn't really get a full-time shot. And in the shot that he did, you know, it wasn't as successful, obviously, as you'd like it to be. He did have a nice weekend, though, this weekend. He had the triple on Saturday going 1-for-2, and then on Sunday, 2-for-3, 4 RBIs, also a walk. He had another triple, a double. So a nice weekend for him. Yeah, you know, for all these guys, I think Jed kind of knows what he's got. They kind of have seen the deal, at least at this point. But, you know, certainly for young guys like Velasquez, if you can make the most of these final opportunities, however few they may be, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, right? You might as well end on a high note, show a little bit of what you got.
Well, you talk about vibes. When he's doing well, Nelson, him and Morel and Franmil, the trio of those guys, immaculate.
Did you see the thing on Friday that Franmil put in the dugout?
Yeah, Franmil area only.
Yeah, no Morel or Velasquez specifically. That was great. I do love those vibes, right? Like whether we see all three of those guys back. But
I hope we do.
The gifts of them, you know, jumping up and down on the home runs, like that. That is the stuff that you want. You want to see
fun.
That.
It's fun. Yeah. All right, well, Corey, this is it. The last series preview of the season. This is, what, our 7th season? Yeah, seven years doing this. So, wow. All right, so
and now we're both
here
old
we go.
Men.
In our 30s, yeah. Corey. What happened to us? All right, well, back on the low of this podcast. Where are we? So Monday, Cubs in Cincinnati. 5:40 p.m. start time. We have Hayden Wisniewski pitching again for the Cubs this season. Overall record is 3-1, a 2.3 ERA. He'll be facing Hunter Green for Cincinnati. He's 4-13 with a 4.6 ERA. Then on Tuesday, we have Cincinnati's Sessa pitching, who's 4-4 with a 4.76 ERA. Assad for the Cubs, 2-2, a 3.62 ERA. Same start time at 5:40 p.m. Wednesday, we have Cincinnati's Ashcraft out there, who is 5-5, a 4.52 ERA. And then to finish off the season for the Cubs will be none other than Adrian Sampson, looking to add to his quality start tally this season. He's 4-5 with a 3.1 ERA. He's been really good in the second half. Again, worth over one win above replacement. So a fitting ending to the season with Sampson closing it out. And what I'm looking for is just savoring these next 3 games. I hate it. I hate the last game of the season, Corey. Just like entering the middle part of October, no Cubs baseball, knowing you have to wait 5 more months. It sucks. So I'll be not looking for anything this series. I'll just be savoring this. I want to see more Nico base hits. I want to see that weighted on base average above 320. You know, I'm a big numbers guy like that.
Are
I
you?
Want to see him go above a little bit. Oh. I want to see him go above 320. So if he can do that, then you know I'll be ecstatic. If not, you know, still a success and still above league average offensively. But 320 above Nico, that's the goal for the series.
We have to transition into hate watching. I was at Murphy's Bleachers on Friday afternoon with our guy Cody Delmendo, and I was explaining to him how much I do, in a sick way, enjoy hate watching my enemies lose in the playoffs.
Oh, I love it.
And I have a long list of enemies in the playoffs. So
yeah, I mean, mostly everyone.
Pretty much everybody is my enemy. Yeah. But yeah, so I in a sick way, I do kind of look forward to that. I'd rather be watching the Cubs in the playoffs, but I get a weird amount of enjoyment about watching.
I mean, hold on. Imagine like those camera shots of Pujols and Yadi sad in the dugout.
Oh, I'm interested.
You know, those sad
yes.
Cardinal fan shots as well. That's going to be amazing.
Right. Oh, I'm into that.
Let's go.
Yes. Okay. I'm looking forward to that. you know, in this series, yeah, nothing. I mean, nobody's changing anybody's mind on anything in three games. Just want everybody to finish healthy. And, you know, kind of like we just talked about with Nelson, right? Like, you know, finish on a high note. There's a lot of guys who I think we've really seen a lot, and we've come to the conclusion of like, okay, yeah, great. This is great. This went great. This year was a success, and we're moving on to next year. You know, there are some guys where we're not sure, right? But hopefully they can at least have a good series, finish things strong. So many guys in the bullpen that we've seen, right, would love for this pitching staff as a whole. Obviously, the rotation has been great in the second half, but the pitching staff as a whole to finish off this series with another nice string of games. Like this weekend, they allow one run in three straight games. Keep that going, right? Like you just love that. It looks aesthetically pleasing, and you dig into it, and you just look through the box score of the starter, all these relievers just coming in, succeeding, doing their job, and like finishing on a high note. It's just what you want to see. But yeah, I'm with you, Brendan. Like this is we've got another month of baseball, but it's not our baseball, right? So we've got three more games left of Pat Hughes, which is another thing that I just said out loud that I...
What are you doing
to yourself?
I wasn't
thinking about that before. I said that live.
I could, like, sense you just, like, kind of going into a deep darkness.
Yeah, this is one where, like, that might have been a good time for us to have been, like, me to be in studio or something. Because that, I bet my face changed. I wasn't thinking about that as I said it. And then I said it, and I'm like, oh. Oh. Oh, yes, that makes me miserable. Right, okay, right, cool. Glad I realized that. Anyway, yeah, it's our last Cubs baseball. So
stop it.
That's what you got. So yeah, it's been a weird year, but all in all, I would probably rather spend my time watching the Cubs lose than not watching the Cubs at all. Right?
No, I love it.
So that's how we are. I assume if you're at 59 minutes into listening to Brendan and I here on a Monday morning, for you, you probably feel the same, right? We're all sick and twisted and depraved in one way or another. But I think that's what we have for you. I'm gonna go try and savor the last Wrigley Field hot dog that I had earlier this afternoon, see if I can dream the taste, you know, and just live in that for a little while. But other than that, that is what we have for you. You've got three games left. Brendan and I, of course, will be back with you to break down the final series with the Reds and then, you know, ultimately, like, move into our full season thoughts and report cards and all of that, however we want to do that. Of course, don't miss your final pre- and post-games of the year with Luke and Cody and Ryan live on YouTube. We appreciate your support of CHGO and, of course, the CHGO Cubs podcast. Don't forget to use that code CHGO when you sign up at PointsBet. It is the best way to support everything we are doing. That's all we have. Another sweep for these second-half Cubs. David Ross's boys don't quit. We'll talk to you again after the Cubs and Reds finish up not just their series, but their season. Thank you for listening to Brendan and I. Talk to you again soon. And as always, go Cubs.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.